Honey and Holly, Holly?
I mean, is it psycho or is it just great planning?
I'm like, why are we out here? Because they love the game.
No.
I do not want to hit a little white golf all around.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Penny and Holly Can't Quit Golf. I feel like I should say can.
If you say can't. And I'll say can't.
Welcome to another episode of Henny and Helly Can't Quit Golf. I can't do the can't without the golf. The two go hand in hand. Yeah. Helly, how are you? What have you been up to?
I'm good, Henny. I'm good. I'm actually currently in Orlando, Florida, where I went to college or university, as you would say, visiting my college coach, which has been really fun. And I got to watch the team do their short game practice yesterday, which was fun. And all these college kids, I mean, it feels like yesterday that I was in school, and all these kids, they look so young. It's just crazy how time flies. But yeah, doing well. Got to do my my first week of golf broadcasting last week. So
how was it?
You know, it was really fun. It was fun. And you know, you are a veteran in the golf broadcasting space and I am a complete rookie, but I really enjoyed it. Definitely a new skill set for me, being a host, but I had a great analyst by the name of James Nitties, an Australian guy that I could just sit there and just listen to him talk and forget to talk because he's such a beautiful accent. But, I really enjoyed it and, hoping to do more, definitely a learning curve. I felt a lot more comfortable on day four than day one, but I felt that it came somewhat naturally, but that might just be because I've watched probably thousands of hours of golf broadcasts as you have as well for our entire lives. And, you know, we pretend that we, you know, commentate for our friends as they hit their shots. So I just pretended that, you know, John Rahm was my buddy and I was just, John Rahm on the fourth hole now. How far has he got, Colin? And I would, you know, throw it to the guy in the course and I enjoyed it.
What was the most unexpectedly hard thing?
Okay, the most unexpectedly hard thing was when we would wrap up a show. I have to give a big shout out to Brian Katrick because I spoke with him after day one and I was like, how do you wrap up the show? Because the producer in my ear was like, hey, Holly, all right, we're going to be finishing up here now and we'll have 30 seconds of just kind of some scenic photos with some end credits almost, if you will. And I was like, okay. So he's like, yeah, so just like talk for 30 seconds and wrap up the show. And I'm like, what do I do? And so I'll tell you what I said, Henny, and I am absolutely mortified. I go, well, it's been a beautiful day here in Scottsdale, Arizona. We saw putts go in and we saw putts not go in. That's how I ended the show. And I was like, oh my goodness. I can't
wait, what did you do for the rest of the 30 seconds?
I just said, and looking forward to an exciting Friday. It was so mortifying. I wanted to go crawl in a hole. But again, big shout out to BK because I went to him afterwards and I was like, what do you do for those 30 seconds at the end where you're supposed to wrap it up? And he's like, you don't have to talk for the whole time. You look at the pictures. If they're showing you fans, you say, you know, the fans are out in force. We didn't have fans last year. Great to see them out again. If they show you John Rahm, you say, John Rahm, favorite of the tournament. He's looking to get his win here this week. And then you say, thanks for watching.
Now.
Yeah, thanks for watching. And we'll see you tomorrow at XYZ time. And I'm like, well, that would have been nice if somebody was just like, it's been a beautiful day. We saw many golf shots hit and some good ones and some not so good ones. So, oh my goodness, mortifying.
Amazing.
You know, all part of the learning curve. But Henny, you, again, like I said before, veteran golf broadcaster, what's your number one? I mean, I'm going to have to pick your brain a bunch over, I'm sure, the next few years, but what's your number one tip for me as I move forward in this journey?
Before I give you my tip, I'll make you feel better with my number one faux pas to this
okay.
point. I was doing LPGA voiceover in the gallery, which mm-hmm. is like where everyone from production sits. And producing was my boss, who never produces, really, unless it's like super high level. Jason Wesley, who I absolutely love, and he's helped me so much through my career. And so obviously I'm wanting to impress him, right? Because he is sitting in the gallery, in the row, right in front of me, so I can see the back of his head. So I've written out my whole, sorry if anyone hears me sniffle, by the way, I have a terrible cold, and I know it sounds probably awful over a podcast in your ears, so I'll try and keep my sniffling to a minimum. Hopefully producer will can cut as many out as possible. So I've written out, this is years ago, and one of my first times presenting a tournament, I'm not in vision, so I'm like writing out everything I want to say to the point because I really want to impress Jason. And I can't remember the name of the tournament, but it was in Arkansas. And so not having really been to the middle of America much, I'd been to Florida and the West Coast. I looked at the word on paper and I didn't think to ask anyone how to pronounce it because I knew I can read. I know how to pronounce that word. So I do the whole top of the show. I'm giving it big. I'm like, yes, because it's such an exciting event. I'm reeling out my stats. I'm like, 6 of the world's top 10 are here. This is who won. Like, I'm like, in my head, I'm like, ah, I'm on fire. I set my headphones down. I've nailed it. And Jason, I'm looking at the back of his head, waiting for the praise that's just sure to come my way. He stands up very slowly and he turns around to me and he goes, it's Arkansas, not Arkansas. And sits back down. And I just wanted the ground to like swallow me up. I was like, first of all, who pronounces Arkansas? Arkansas. There is W in there. There is R in there.
I went to University of Arkansas for 2 years before transferring to Rollins College, where I am currently sitting in Orlando. And my granny would be like, how's Arkansas? I'm like, it's good, granny. Thank you. So to be fair.
The most confusing thing is that there is a state called Kansas, which is spelt the exact same way without the AR. Yet apparently because there's an AR in front of it, you add a W at the end. Either way,
I know.
That's my most embarrassing faux pas. And then I looked on Twitter and I subsequently saw a ton of, it's Arkansas, not Arkansas. So that will make you feel a bit better about your 30-second ending of some putts thrown in. I think my number one advice, though, is tough because, like, it's going to sound super generic. It's not meant to be, but is just to be yourself, which is actually really tough to do in one of the most unnatural environments where you have to try and be naturally you. And I think it just takes time. So I think my actual advice would just to be kind to yourself and know that things like that are gonna happen. Nobody does their first broadcast completely smooth and, you know, getting everything right. Even if they've been told this is how to do it, sometimes you just don't have the words in your brain. You're just like,
You know what I will say, and this is just my small mini rant. Okay.
Good.
Somebody on Twitter who I admire and is a good friend of mine. He actually works at Golf Digest and I love him. Chris Powers. I'll give him a shout out. And I'm going to have to tell Chris Powers that I talked about him on our podcast, but he tweeted and I tweeted at him after I did my putts went in, putts not go in. But he tweeted that somebody on the broadcast said, so John Rahm, number one player in the world, somebody on the broadcast said, don't sleep on John Rahm. And I was like, that obviously is, nobody is sleeping on John Rahm. Like John Rahm's the number one player in the world. But I told him, so I messaged him and I was like, I was crying at your tweet about somebody saying don't sleep on John Rahm. I'll have you know that I ended the broadcast with some putts went in, some putts didn't go in. But then you don't know until you actually do it. Sometimes you just say stupid shit. Like it's tough to think that people are listening to single thing that you say, you know?
Yeah, I think if the viewers at home knew how often we say something and then to ourselves go, what are you saying? Like it happens a lot. We say this to ourselves. I'm sure that the viewers go on Twitter and then go, huh? But yeah. The other thing as well is like, no one in real life is perfect. So I think sometimes there's a lot of pressure to be perfect in a broadcast, and I'm still trying to learn this one. But I was on air a couple weeks ago and I said, Lydia Kang. I was talking about Lydia Ko and Danielle Kang. And to the camera, I was like, Lydia Kang. I'm like, no, Lydia Ko. Sorry, that's an amalgamation of Danielle Kang, Lydia Ko. And then I just carried on with the broadcast. So it's okay to be like, correct a mistake live on air.
Right, or because you're a real person. You know what? Real people.
What is that word? I just can't think of that word right now. But what I'm trying to say is,
right,
but it takes a long time to get to that level of comfortability. So that's why I think my ultimate advice is just be kind to yourself, be gentle with yourself, know that mistakes are going to happen. Even if you've been in the space for forever, everyone that works in broadcasting has like a million stories of terrible things or awkward things that they said. So yeah, just be kind to yourself, and ultimately you're just going to let your personality out. You have an awesome personality, so as soon as you get comfortable, you just let it fly.
You know, honey, I would liken hosting, or really anything, hosting, analysis of golf, it actually reminded me a lot of improv and the improv classes that I've taken in the past. And the slogan,
wait, you've taken improv classes?
Oh yeah, I love an improv class.
I love that.
It's so fun. It's really fun.
How are they similar?
They're similar in the way, because the whole sort of idea behind improv, or their slogan, if you will, is yes and, meaning that you're never going to, for example, if you said, hi, I am the Queen of England, I would be like, yes, you are, Your Majesty. And we would just go from there. So I'm never contradicting you. Whatever you say is right. And we are moving forward. So it actually makes you like a really, really good listener. And you have to just be all in on whatever you're going to say. Obviously, you can't make stuff up in the broadcast, but it felt similar in the way.
That might be fun.
Hello, I'm the Queen of England, and I'm here with King George, and we're broadcasting the golf today. But it reminded me of it in a way, because you have to be fully committed to where you're going with this, and you don't know what's going to happen. You know, it's not like you know that so-and-so is going to make a hole-in-one, or you don't know if they're going to duff a chip, but you need to be fully present and ready for whatever is going to come your way, and then trust whatever instinct that you have in reacting to it. So just being okay with uncertainty and just along for the ride. Here we go.
Yeah, and I think what you said, trusting your instinct, is so key. Just trusting yourself to speak on air and say what you would say normally. Which, Hallie, that leads us perfectly into our guest this week. What's the name when something sounds like what it is, like splash?
Oh, onomatopoeia.
This man's surname is an onomatopoeia for his personality. Richard Kind, who is an incredibly kind man. Absolutely love talking to him. And he stars in two of my favorite movie TV shows. One that is all about improv, Big Mouth, on Netflix. If you haven't seen it, it's absolutely hilarious. Really weird, but hilarious. And then Inside Out, which is probably one of my absolute favorite animated movies. But I hope that you guys will enjoy this chat that we had with Richard as much as we did.
Richard Kind, welcome to Henny and Hallie Can't Quit Golf. Henny has a beautiful British accent, so I now say Can't Quit Golf, but we're so excited to have you.
It's nice to be here. I had a friend from England who spoke very, very well. And whenever he would go in, he would always say, I'll have this steak with a baked potato and some water. He would always say, water. They could never understand. And so he would always go, speak very beautifully. And whenever he knew, he was going to go, and water, because the English accent, they couldn't handle the word water.
I can confirm that that happens every time I order water. And then when I go to enunciate further, if they go, sorry, what was that? It makes it worse, because the further enunciation in the English accent goes water. which then just makes things worse. So you do occasionally have to put on the American accent.
Right. He just American accents it all and goes, water. And it just sounds horrible. And that's how we talk.
I have a horribly embarrassing story for me. We lived in Florida years ago, Northeast Florida, and there was a hurricane coming. And this was the first time I'd experienced this. So we go to Home Depot and we go and try and get the everything you get for the, you know, batteries, lights. And then one of the things was a tarp. Well, in England, it's pronounced tarp. I can see by Richard's face, he is also confused, which in American, it's pronounced tarp. So I go to a kind gentleman there. I was like, excuse me, do you know where a tarp is? And he's like, a tarpus? What's a tarpus? And in this moment, Ben and I lock eyes and he's too far away down the aisle to help me. So this realization comes like, oh God, I'm going to have to put on my American accent here. And I'm like, okay, because it's quite a strong accented word in an American accent. And I'm so glad no one paid witness to this, but I just felt myself like the red was just rising as I went, oh, could I have a tarp? And he's like, oh, a tarp, right, yeah. And Ben, my husband, just is dying, giggling, walking towards me, having heard the whole thing.
Oh, that's funny.
That's funny. I love that. Well, luckily, I can understand, Henny, when you say golf, because I think golf is pretty, you know, universally pronunciated golf.
Yes. Richard, have you played golf in England?
I have played golf in England. I was doing Guys and Dolls in the West End. And I go to one course and somebody tells me about the Actors Society Golf. Are you familiar with that?
No.
The Actors Society. This is really interesting. I will tell you the derivation of it. When actors used to tour from town to town with a show back in the early 1900s, they would, you know, go from town to town and there was nothing to do during the day. So they would drink and they would come to the show drunk. So the producers decided to get them all golf memberships so that during the day they could play golf and then show up at the theater, hopefully sober at night, even though golf quite often promotes drinking. So so it worked. And they formed the golf, the Actors Golf Society. So I played with, what's his name? Tom, who's playing Spider-Man?
Holland.
Tom,
I played with Tom Holland once, but his father, who was an MC there, or a host there, is an avid golfer. So I played with him. I played with an actor, I think it's Tom Ellis was his name. He's on a show called Lucifer. And he's an English actor. And so I got to play with him there. And what I really remember is the way that I got there was I would take a train and then I would take a bus that let me off right at the golf course. And I would walk with my bag down the driveway. I mean, it was a real hour schlep to get there, but it was near Tommy Steele's house. You know who Tommy Steele is, don't you? Are you going to tell me no?
Hey.
What kind of a Londoner are you? Tommy Steele was a diminutive, short, but wonderful actor, beloved in London, beloved. He did Half a Sixpence. He did Finnegan's Rainbow, the movie. He was in a Disney movie, The Happiest Billionaire, I think. He was beloved in London. Ask anybody over the
age. He's a sir. Sir Tommy. No?
Well, forgive me for not saying sir. Of course he's a sir, but he was a semi-rock star in the early 60s.
Yeah.
I don't think he's alive anymore. But he was beloved by the London people and hated by the people he acted with. He was, I can tell you, one of the greatest stories ever. Is he still alive?
He's still alive. He's still going. He's 85.
All right, I'm going to tell you a horrible story about him. He was hated by his cast members. And he was doing the stage version of Singing in the Rain. And at the during one of the numbers, the Singing in the Rain number, there was a trough above, and the water would come down and it would start raining. They hated him so much that before one performance, the whole cast urinated in the trough so that when the water came down, it was urine.
Oh my God. Why did they hate him so much? Was he just really difficult to work with?
He's a SOB. He was a horrible man.
All right. Okay. But beloved by everyone else.
Certainly had talent. He was adorable. He was wonderful. He played the leprechaun in the movie Finnegan's Rainbow. He's adorable.
Huh. Interesting.
That is a grade A prank, though. I mean, as far as pranks go,
fantastic. Really up there. You can only do it when somebody's doing Singing in the Rain. But
yeah, it's a very niche prank.
That is the exact word. It is a niche prank. Yes.
That's incredible. Richard, your London golf trek sounds similar to my time living in New York City. My golf treks, getting on the subway and then an Uber and then walking.
Right.
It just takes, you know, a while to get out there. But that, you know, that it shows the dedication that you have to the game. And I'm just curious, when did you start playing golf?
I can tell you, it's a pretty, it took a long while to get there. My dad, when he passed away, was a 6 handicap. My dad said he gave me the lessons, gave me the clubs. We belonged to a golf club. And I said, I don't want to. And my dad said, okay. And I used to say to my kids, back then I probably loved him for saying okay, but today I curse him. I wish I had learned as a kid. My kids today, I say, I'd like you to learn. And they say, we don't want to. And I say, sorry, you got to. And I said, you're going to hate me today, but someday you're going to walk off the 18th green being owed money, and you're going to look up and you're just going to say, thank you, Daddy. So I said no to it all. Then I was in Second City. You know what Second City is in Chicago?
Yes, sir.
It's an improvisation group. And we used to work at night, and we had never had matinees. What do you do during your days? So I was living with a friend of mine who happened to be from Evanston, Illinois, who had friends that played golf, and they wanted another somebody else to join their threesome. Was I interested? And I said, you know what? And he had to work all the time, so he couldn't do it. So I said, I'll play golf. We would leave at around 5:30 in the morning to go play golf. We would get there while you couldn't even see the ball through the fog. And we would play, and we would all be finished by 9 o'clock. Get in the car. They would go to work. I would go to sleep because I pulled an all-nighter. I haven't been to sleep yet. And I would sleep till 3, 4 in the afternoon, then go to work at night. Terrible for my health, but I got to play golf a lot.
Wow. I love that. I love that. I got to play golf a few days ago with Matt Walsh, one of the founders of UCB.
Where did you play?
We were in a sketch together for a Golf Channel thing. And I just started chatting with him. But it just really amazes me, Richard, maybe you could shed some light on this, whether it's incredibly successful businessmen or actors, comedians, musicians, athletes. What is it about golf, do you think, that attracts all of these incredibly, you know, people that are at the top of their fields?
The first thing is, although par being a perfect score, the most perfect score is 18, which you will never hit. Although it's involved in gambling, you really are playing only yourself. That's really it. You go out as a foursome or, you know, or whatever, you're really there yourself, and nobody wants to hear how you're doing. You're doing well. Nobody wants to hear you're doing poorly. They don't want to hear anything. Only you care. So you're really just competing with yourself. And there are very few places where you can, the word isn't monetize, but declare how well you're doing in any sport, unless it's a team sport. How many baskets did I make? How many runs did I hit? whatever it is. But in golf, it's solo. Even if you're playing with somebody, it's a solo sport. The second thing is, you know, if you go to a piano and you put your finger on middle C, you make the same sound as Vladimir Horowitz, the greatest pianist ever. But there are other keys. You can hit a golf ball and it can end up in the same hole as Tiger Woods. In fact, you can get a hole in one where he takes three to get in. So there is a, you can be great playing golf.
Yeah.
You just are lucky.
Even for a moment, you could be great. And that's what keeps bringing us back.
And that's what you aspire to. The thing is that I don't consider myself entirely competitive, but I know what I'm capable of doing on the golf course. And since I've had children and since I've moved to New York, I am not as good as what I used to be. And I aspire to what I used to be or try to relive what I used to be. And is it my age that makes me worse? Is it the kids and the not having the range as often that makes me not as good? But I used to be a 10 handicap and now I'm an 18. And I hate being an 18 because I know what it's like to hit the ball and play the game well. I used to, right. I loved it. And it's really disappointing when I scull, I don't scull a ball, but I'll scull a chip. You know, I'm 8 feet off the green. I used to be able to get it close enough that it's a guaranteed two putt. Sometimes a one putt. And now I'm 4 feet in front of the green or 8 feet in front of the green and two. And I make a six because it skulls over the green. And that's just not being able to chip the ball 3-4 times a week, even to go to the range and just step up. You know, when you step up to a ball and go, please stay in the area code of where I want it to be. And you find out you're going to a different state. That's horrible.
Yeah. That's tempering your expectations can be tricky. Especially, you know, I know Henny is about to start playing a lot more golf because she's joining a golf club and she's going to be playing a lot more. And that's something for me. I've recently started playing a lot more, but I'm not practicing 4 or 5 hours a day like I used to. But in my mind, I should still be able to shoot, you know, under par. And I get out there and I'm like, oh, no, definitely not. So it's definitely tricky when you don't spend as much time, your skill level wanes, but your expectations stay the same, which is, it's kind of tricky.
Yeah. You know, I used to, there are times when if you work out, you lifted a certain amount, oh my gosh, I can't lift that anymore. Or when I do, my shoulder or my elbow hurts. These are horrible things.
Mm-hmm. Right. Richard, I got a question for you. I know we were talking about, you know, how our golf skills might wane if we don't, you know, keep up our practice schedule and play often. When it comes to acting and it comes to improv, is that something that you've just done so much now that it's completely second nature to you? Or is that a skill set that you really have to keep up? Like, do you get rusty when it comes to acting and improv, or is that just always?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'll answer in a couple of different levels. Something interesting about working as an actor on TV versus doing theater. On TV, your goal, if you're doing an hour show, single camera, your goal is to quote unquote, make your day. Meaning you have 9 pages of the episode to shoot that day. And you have a lot of the dialogue. In order to shoot those 9 days in the allotted time without going into overtime, without costing the production company a lot of money, is to get those 9 pages finished. If you start at 7, you got to finish by 7 o'clock at night. If you don't know your lines, you're going to go to 8 o'clock. You're going to go to 9 o'clock. Who knows? And that extra time will cost the production company a lot of money. Therefore, you are a liability. So you better know your lines. And that is, their goal is that America see the words that were written by the writer. In a play, you rehearse for 2, 3, 4 weeks. Lines are easy, okay? You want to get a good character. You want to make sure the arc of the play, that in every scene you know exactly what your motivation is. Now, on a TV show, if you're a good actor, you're going to do the lines correctly. That's the first thing. You're going to get the lines out. If you're lucky, you get the script ahead of time. Maybe you work on it during the weekend, and you come to set being a good actor. Sometimes it's just, let me get through the scene, okay? So I believe a good actor goes and does a play a year, even if it's for a month, for 2 weeks. Learn the lines so that your goal is to actually do the character and not just say, I got through with that scene. The lines are finished. And so I believe that if you take an actress like Cherry Jones, our great actresses, Laurie Metcalf, not our most famous actresses, but our great, great actresses. You know, the ones, Judi Dench, perfect example. They've all done plays. They know what it's like to be able to create the arc of a character. So they can bring those tools to the set.
I would have thought the other way around. Like, I would have thought, anytime I've been to the theater, I always think, oh my goodness, how on earth do these actors remember these scripts for like a 2 hour long play?
All I can tell you is memorizing the words is the easiest thing about acting. And I'll tell you why.
Really?
Because acting is infinite. Do I have a stomach ache? Did I get in a fight with somebody? Was how do I feel when I go out on stage? Did I just get into a fight with somebody or in an accident? Or was the subway ride over to the theater just so uncomfortable? Was I standing there? How did I sleep last night? But the words are the words are the words. You either got them or you don't. It's the only finite thing in acting.
You know what I kind of feel like this sounds like, and I'm always just likening everything to golf, I guess, because it's what I know, but it's almost like when you're working on your swing and you're being technical versus just going out and playing golf and really like playing the course and seeing the shot. Like you, that's why you grind on the range, why you get that feeling so you can go out and just play, you know?
We were literally just having this conversation a couple of episodes ago when I was saying that I feel like golf is one of those things that it's almost impossible to perform and unlock your best golf professionally when you have stuff going on in your life, in the background, personally.
Right. But if you're putting well, you sort of step up to the ball and sort of know the ball's going to go in. I feel correct.
Mm-hmm.
Everything in golf is infinite. Everything, including where you're teeing off. Have they moved the markers? You're not always hitting it the same place. The flag is in a different place, even though you're going on the same golf course. Very often it changes. But in acting, you either got the words or you don't. And yes, it's hard work to memorize, just like it's hard work to become a good putter or to chip the balls correctly. But there is something finite in theater. And that is the script. Shakespeare is never going to change. And you keep saying, and I will also tell you, I know you've heard the phrase, acting is reacting. So if I say, how are you feeling today? You're not going to say lampshade. You're going to say, I feel okay. In theater, if they say something, you're going to react by what the author says, but it's usually you're reacting to the line that came before it. So that you're not saying something that's, you know, that's not connected. You are telling a story, you have a want, and you are reacting to what has just been said. So one line can follow the other. Does that make sense to Penny?
It does. Yeah. I am curious though, how do you memorize? Like, are there any methods in particular, or is it just pure repetition that you memorize? Because that's always blown my mind.
Everybody has their own style. I am somebody who, for instance, if you're doing a play, or I'm doing, I don't have the luxury to do this in TV or movies, but while you're rehearsing, where you are standing, what motivates you to move over there will help you with your lines. But a lot of times you have to show up on set with the lines already memorized. And that does not help me. But in theater, I'll rehearse for a week before I even start memorizing the lines. You just go here, you do here, you figure out the characters. And as you're going along, there is a repetition. Let's do this again. Let's do this again. And when I memorize lines, here's what I think of is I look at a script. I say, well, I'm never going to memorize this. This is just too difficult. Then after 3, 4, 5 days of rehearsal, you go, oh, well, I could do this. Then you start memorizing. You work at home. You work with somebody. And you go, oh, I have a semblance. I know what I say here, but I can't remember exactly the order of the words. Then all of a sudden, you get the key words that you want to say, but you know what he's talking about. Then all of a sudden, you do get the words, but you're thinking about it. And I call that, those are all the bricks in the wall. And then all of a sudden, you really have it, and that's the cement. So that even if you wanted to move those bricks, you couldn't because you've cemented it. And once you have that cement wall, everything is easy. Then you get to think about what is my motivation? Who am I talking to? Anything like that.
Listening to you talking about acting, similar to Hallie, I just keep connecting the dots between what you're saying and acting and how you sort of cement things in to how that goes to performing on the golf course. So you go from thinking, you get your technique, you do some drills, you're really thinking about it. You can't go and play like that because you're still rehearsing it in your mind, and physically you're just grinding it in there. And eventually when you do get it, the final step, is to not think, just to do it without thinking. And then when you do that, then you can go out on the course and then you're thinking more about, all right, I want to leave myself a 10 footer here uphill, the right section, where's this wind coming from? You're thinking about everything but your technique.
In golf, you don't want to think. You've got to trust gravity to do its job more than you have to think about where the club is going. You've got to practice enough so that the club is going to go where you want it to go without you even thinking.
Right.
If you saw, here's the actor, here's the other actor, but here's the camera. And behind the camera are 50 people. 50 people, lighting people, a wardrobe people, everybody. You can train yourself to not know that those people are there. Now, the average person thinks about, what do I look like in front of 50 people? But you can't. Golfers do it. Golfers have to think that. When you're
like standing, being in the zone.
When you're standing and there's a row of two rows of people lining the fairway, do you think about those people who are lining the fairway ever?
No, you do. No, you're just focusing on where you're going.
The best don't, that's for sure.
The best don't. They block it out. The best block out this, I better make this putt in order to win the tournament. But they somehow don't. They can take their nerves and just say, I've got to make the putt, as opposed to I've got to make the putt to win the tournament. Or I've got to drive it without hitting these people on the side of the fairway. I don't even think they think about the people on the side of the fairway. If I got up there, or the average golfer, we'd be paralyzed by the people on the side. Paralyzed. And you got to understand, when we're acting, 50 people are watching us, you would be paralyzed by those 50 people. Paralyzed by them. I don't know they exist. When I'm in the scene, I don't know they're there. Now, tell me about, and I'll tell you something else. I'll go to the first tee at my club. People will be standing around watching me hit. I performed the producers, and I performed one other thing at the Hollywood Bowl. 15,000 people watching me live at one time. I am more nervous hitting that golf ball at the first tee than I am performing in front of 15,000 people at the Hollywood Bowl, because that's something that I can do well. I've rehearsed it. I know what it is. But who the hell knows what's going to happen on the first tee? I you just don't know. I'm throwing it. It's just, it's haphazard. And that's just something that happens. You would not be paralyzed. I am.
I love hearing like the golf and other industry crossovers, and live broadcasting is really similar as well, in that you have to hold things in your mind while going to different features, graphics, talking to your guests, listening to the director in your ear. It's really similar, and you have to, the only way, if you're thinking about what you're saying, you get no personality out, because you're just thinking, all right, just go here, 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 here. You have to sort of cement it in your mind. And the bet sometimes shows that I do, and I'm thinking too much, or I'm not 100% sure on like a stat or something, and you know, you don't come across as you. But then when you have the flow, I guess it is, or the zone, or whatever people want to call it, where you're so locked in on what you're doing, that's when you're the best, because you're relaxed, you're not thinking about any of the other stuff.
Right, you're relaxed.
As someone that's, you know, been around the game for a little while, what is one thing about golf that you would change if you could?
I don't know. I'm trying to think if there's ways to make it more accessible for more people. However, I don't want it to be, because tee times can be precious. But I think that it should be a more equitable game. I mean, I love it when you go to courses and it's the guys in jeans and plaid shirts who are pretty great, and they've always been pretty good. They're surprisingly good. I love that. I, who work hard, I mean, these guys just play, that children would play, that more women would play. But I really wish that it were a more equitable sport for everybody. I happen to like that, and I wish that we could get rid of the elitism that that golf has.
I love that, Richard. Well, we're going to let you go, because we know you have a tea time coming up here. It was an absolutely, it was a pleasure to chat with you. And I think we feel like we could probably go forever. So we'll have to get you back on here soon sometime.
Yeah. Thank you. It was so good to speak with you.
I would love it. I would love it. Forward to playing golf with you.
Great. I look forward to it. Thank you so, so much. I hope you have a great round this afternoon, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, Richard.
Thank you.
Bye. Hallie, I enjoyed that chat so much. What a great guy. And I think one of the things that I loved about talking to him is just how much he loves golf, like absolutely adores it.
He really does. I mean, I could have talked to him for a few more hours, I think. The stories that that guy has, and like you said, just absolutely obsessed with golf. It's really neat to hear people, whether it's Asha Rangappa, who we had on the podcast before, and compare, you know, learning to shoot a gun as an FBI agent to golf, and now hearing Richard compare acting to golf, really neat to hear people from all walks of life sort of compare and contrast their professions to this game.
Yeah, 100%. It was interesting talking to Richard, because I feel like he didn't really appreciate how much high level acting, you know, he's had an incredible long career, diverse, like, and in theater as well, how similar that was, the skills that he's picked up over the years and is honed, how similar that is to high level golf. It's really fascinating that, you know, so many, I think high level performance at anything, whether that's writing, hell, in an office, accounting, golf, you know, they all have, okay, they may not all be identical, but they have veins, they have threads that you can pull on that ties them all together, whether that's like being in the zone, like Richard spoke about, being able to block everything out, knowing something really well, being able to think outside the box in an office, performing under pressure, performing to a deadline. It was fascinating watching the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am recently. And obviously they have a ton of celebrities and athletes across all different fields, businessmen. And that's just kind of what we're talking about, isn't it? Is that everyone comes together and can use what they've mastered in their individual fields and bring it out onto the golf course. And Amanda Bellionis at the weekend interviewed Schoolboy Q. I don't know if you saw this. And he just gave the most incredible answer that was so unexpected. I think she said it was the highlight of her week, where he was like, yeah, golf basically mirrors life completely. The ups, the downs, you have to keep going. It tests you physically, tests you mentally. I can't like paraphrase exactly what he said, but if anyone has the chance to like YouTube it, check it out. It was such a brilliant answer. And I feel like that summarizes basically what we're saying, what we were talking about with Richard in the interview, is like, even if you think like you're listening and you're like, oh, but I'm just all right, but I'm just terrible at golf. Like I can't hit the ball, or I'm struggling with this right now. Try and pull from something else that you're good at. We're all good at something in our lives. Try and pull on something else that you're good at, a skill there that you could take onto the golf course that you're already good at, a section of golf, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that's a great way to put it. And I think, I don't know about you, honey, but you know, in my line of work now, my tendencies when I'm under pressure, when I'm nervous, are very similar to the tendencies that I had on the golf course when I'm under pressure and nervous. For example, when I was nervous on the golf course, I would swing really quickly. I would never complete my backswing. Well, when I'm nervous on camera, I generally speak very quickly and I break into a cold sweat and I start panicking. And so if anybody, you know, if you're nervous on the golf course, what do you do when you're nervous in your line of work that you made a living doing? How do you calm yourself down? You know, for me, it's deep breathing. It's closing my eyes and, you know, just really trying to get present. And so, yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. All the people that have reached the heights of whatever industry they're in, or at least to be able to make a good living in it, you're obviously, you know, like you said, good at something. So what are you able to do that helps you power through those pressure filled moments that you can then draw on when you are on the golf course?
Yeah, for sure. Even though, having said that, I don't know if I can pull on anything that would make me remember all my lines of like a 300 page play. That is incredible. He does that. And he's just like, well, I do it like this. It's just second nature to him. No, yeah. I just walk around and that's how I get my points. And I learn this whole play and I'm like, okay.
Yeah. All right, Rich. That's true. There are some people that are anomalies. And I think Richard Kind is one of them. Seriously, an incredible guy.
Yeah. What's your favorite show that he's been in?
Curb Your Enthusiasm. I'm a big Curb. Oh my goodness, honey. It's incredible. I'm a big Larry David fan. I just think he's the funniest guy. And a lot of that, I know we talked about improv at the beginning of the show. We said Richard Kind, big improv guy. A lot of that show is improv. They just come up with a concept or a situation, and then maybe they've got a few lines to pull from, but then they just go, which I think is really, really cool. So I love that show. Highly recommend it.
I love that. Okay, I'm going to check that out. I've just finished watching the Sex and the City latest installment, which I have mixed reviews about. But I really like your improv to broadcasting comparison. And it got me thinking, my final point is going to be, what things do you do that have nothing to do with your profession but help you in your profession? So mine would be reading a fiction book or a really old fashioned classic novel really helps me to broaden my vocabulary when I'm on air. So they have nothing to do with each other. I enjoy reading as it is, but it's just something that I can do more of that I enjoy that actually helps me in my job. Do you have anything like that? I guess improv would be your...
Yeah, probably improv. I mean, I haven't really done a ton of improv as of late. I've been pretty open about this, but I struggle with anxiety. And something that I used to do a lot more of that I didn't do for a while, and now I'm really back at it again, is working out a bunch. And so for me, when my heart rate gets up high, which is something that happens when you're nervous, but also happens when you're maybe doing a, you know, a difficult Peloton class, I start kind of panicking. So for me, so I've started to work out a lot more because I found if I get my heart rate up and my brain starts kind of panicking a little bit, I'm able to bring it back down and sort of talk to myself and be like, you're okay. Everything's good. Everything's good. So just sort of, again, I guess like it goes back to what do you do when you're under pressure? So sort of simulating those high stress moments just in everyday life, so that when there is an actual situation that maybe is a little bit more stressful, I'm like, oh, okay, I do this every day. Like, it's fine if I'm a little nervous.
Yeah. Yeah. I find it fascinating just the things that people do in their lives that have nothing to do with their job maybe, but that perhaps help them be better at what they do. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you guys listening, let us know if you have any tips and tricks that you're like, I do X, Y, Z. It really helps me, because we want to get to know you more as our podcast progresses. So let us know. I'm at Henny Coy on Instagram and at Henny Coyek on Twitter.
And I'm at Hallie Led on Twitter and Instagram.
Yeah, so let us know, and also hit us up with any questions as well that you may have. We didn't do a question section this week, but next time it'll be back.
We'll get on it. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Henny and Hallie Can't Quit Golf. Remember, some putts go in and some putts don't go in, and we will talk to you next time.